This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, sitting in for Terry Gross. As we wind up the week, today we present an encore performance of a concert recorded last year in the Fresh Air studio. I'll let Terry do the introductions.
The last time I heard pianist and composer Dave Burrell perform solo, all I could think of was, we have to get him to play on our show. In the late 60s, Burrell was one of the mavericks of the jazz avant-garde. He's recorded with Archie Shepp and Pharoah Sanders. But he also loves early jazz styles. As our jazz critic Kevin Whitehead has said, Burrell mixes the antique and the modern with a naturalness recalling Earl Hines, Monk, and Sun Ra. Like them, he evokes more than recreates early jazz styles. Burrell combines an avant-garde pianist's love of density with a buoyant old-timey sense of rhythm. Gary Giddens has called Burrell a scintillating solo performer. Thurston Moore of the band Sonic Youth put Burrell's album Echoes in the number one slot on his list of the top 10 free jazz underground recordings. Dave Burrell grew up in Middletown, Ohio, Harlem, and Hawaii. When his family moved to Hawaii after World War II, they were among the few African-American families there. Burrell's latest CD is called Expansion, and it features his group The Full Blown Trio, drummer Andrew Cyril and bass player William Parker. Dave Burrell, welcome to Fresh Air. This is something I've been wanting to do for a long time, so
thanks.
Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And there's a song that's on your new CD that I'd love you to start with. I've also heard you perform it in concert. It's a real treat. This is your reworking of the Irving Berlin song, They Say That Falling in Love is Wonderful. Would you do it for us?
Sure.
Wonderful. I love the way you do that. No, one of the things I just particularly love about your playing is that some of it's really rooted in the very early days of jazz. Ragtime, Jelly Roll Morton. At the same time, you've played a lot of free jazz. You're an avant-garde artist. And the two kind of come together and meet in the middle in your playing. You're drawing on both ends, plus on the whole kind of history of American popular song. And I love the way you've kind of fallen in love with both historical ends and incorporated it for your own means.
Right. Thanks. I didn't really start off for it to be that way. I think that I was caught up in the avant-garde or free jazz movement in the mid-60s in New York, and I was still working on becoming a firmly rooted traditionalist. The players around me that I really respected were interested in both as well. John Coltrane was just departing from tradition and had really validated for all of us colleagues that it was okay if you had a firm tradition, a solid foundation, that you could go ahead and explore other ways of hearing, other ways of soloing, painting.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask you to play a Jelly Roll Morton composition for us now, and this is The Crave. Do you want to say anything about it before you play it?
Yes, The Crave is one of the most significant of all of his rags because it has the Spanish tinge, which is boom, 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 boom. And that ingredient at the time, Morton, when I heard him talk to Alan Lomax at the Smithsonian, he said to Lomax that that ingredient was a very necessary part of the jazz of his era to be included.
So this is Dave Burrell at the piano playing Jelly Roll Morton's The Crave. Dave Burrell playing Jelly Roll Morton's The Crave. You had already played a lot of free jazz and avant-garde jazz before playing Jelly Roll Morton. Were there things in the Morton compositions that struck you as being almost avant-garde in some way? Do you know what I mean? Of being much more modern than you would have thought they could have been in the 1920s.
Yes. bass lines that are so very syncopated that they're timeless. And it doesn't matter what you attach them to. You could have a Morton-inspired bass line at this release point, for example, on the Cray. That note at the end is just sort of shoved into the ensemble of notes as an intrusive pedal point sound, which has just sort of been mimicked throughout the decades.
When you were playing free jazz, I mean, you came to New York in the 60s?
65.
And you were playing free jazz. You were playing with people like Ornette Coleman, Marion Brown, Pharoah Sanders. And was it hard to find a place for yourself in free jazz as a pianist? Sure, there's Cecil Taylor, but Ornette Coleman, for instance, didn't have a piano in his group. And I think a lot of free jazz players might have felt that, you know, piano just harmonically didn't belong.
That's correct. That's what most everybody said. And the piano players had to figure out how to not disturb this new trend. And so what I started doing was learning the melodies, and I'd play along with the horns, and I wouldn't play any chords. And so I became a horn myself. And if it was a short, snappy head like, then I was out, and the horn went on to solo with the bass and drum. And then later on, the horn soloists, frontline people, would turn around to me, and they didn't want chords. They wanted color and rhythm from me. So I had to play clusters that sounded in the idiom of where the melody and the solo, where it had come to, with something like a cluster like what I just played, wouldn't disturb it. So maybe the horn player is up here. And I just went. So that was working sometimes. I think that the most difficult part was the horn players were just figuring out how to become very energetic and not play within some box or some framework. So you can imagine someone just taking a motif and arguing the motif as vigorously as they chose, and the pianist going, the drums and the rhythm section are all doing a chant that stays the same. The horns, however, are leaving the immediate premise.
At the same time that you were, you know, playing all this free jazz in concert, mm-hmm. would you go home and then try to learn like Scott Joplin rags? Because that has been such a fundamental part of who you are.
Yes, in the back of our minds, most of the innovators knew what Coltrane had done, and I think that he was the leader of being able to say, well, I departed after I've thoroughly explored the so-called inside, and I wrote Giant Steps, and I feel now that I must move on to not only into atonal music, but to modes and other approaches. And I have my credentials in order. That's Mr. Coltrane talking, and I think everybody else in the jazz community would agree.
Now, I think, tell me if this is right, that John Coltrane's Giant Steps mm-hmm. is based on an exercise?
Yeah, it is based on a chord progression that has been taken after its initial. That chord progression has a linkage that takes it to an identical chord progression in another key. So it's something that he put together. He got a motif probably from a book like Nicholas Lanevsky's. You could call it an etude, like a Chopin etude, to get better in scurrying around different chord changes for him personally.
Now, Giant Steps, a lot of horn players have played that, and mm-hmm. it's, I think, usually a horn musician's, you know, tune. You do it on piano. You have like a stride piano version of Giant Steps.
Mm-hmm.
Would you play it for us?
Sure.
And this is Dave Burrell at the piano. Listen to you play, I think how strong your fingers are.
Well, a lot of the avant-garde pianists, from having to keep up with drummers that were so strong, like Elvin Jones and Andrew Surreal, even Philly Joe, not to mention Max Roach, but in order to say be there in and be heard and be in the mix, you found that you played a lot harder than you thought you could. And oftentimes, when the ensemble was finished and they had played for an hour, they would want a piano solo. So you would have to keep playing.
Dave Burrell, it's just been great talking with you and hearing you play. I'm so glad we did this. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Jazz pianist Dave Burrell recorded last year. His CD Expansion is on the Hi2 label. Burrell is working on a number of upcoming projects, including a CD to be released in June called Consequences. It's with drummer Billy Martin of the group Badeski, Martin & Wood.